This is your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to talk about how fossil fuel companies influence U.S. universities, including many here in California. Reporter Darna Noor writes that at least 20 board members at California public universities have direct ties to the fossil fuel industry, sparking criticism from climate advocates on and off campus. Of the state's 32 public universities, board members at one-third of them either work or have worked for oil and gas companies, as do two board members at the California State University's foundation. This is according to an analysis by Sunstone Strategies, that's a climate-focused research group. They found that five of the board members in the analysis have ties to Chevron, one of the world's most carbon-emitting companies. Darna Noor is a fossil fuels and climate reporter at The Guardian US. Hi, Darna. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Always good to be here.
Well, it's always great to have you, and thanks for your important reporting. As you write, universities may have divested from fossil fuels, but board members still have industry ties. So first off, can you just remind us, the divestment movement is huge. Talk about some of the California universities that have divested from fossil fuels.
Absolutely. So what we've seen essentially over the past 10 years or so, and especially over the past five, is that public and private universities all over the U.S. are facing a lot of pressure to divest from a number of sort of harmful industries. We've seen calls to divest from gun manufacturers. And another big one, of course, has been the call to divest from coal, oil, and gas, from fossil fuels. For obvious reasons, they are, the kind of leading cause of climate change. They also have really dangerous public health effects for people who live near them, among a number of other concerns. And, a few years ago, California's public universities became actually the largest educational systems at the time to divest. So when University of California divested from fossil fuels in May 2020, it was the biggest educational system in the entire country. And then shortly after that, California State University followed suit, which essentially meant that almost all of California's public universities had pledged to, remove all of their endowment funds from coal, oil, and gas. And yet, I think what we're seeing is that that does not mean that they've been completely disentangled from the interests of the fossil fuel industry.
In many cases, we're talking about a lot of money, right?
Absolutely. So, many of these universities have investments in the endowments, rather, in the sort of millions or billions. Altogether, the schools that we looked at in this analysis serve more than a quarter of a million students. Absolutely, quite a lot of sort of influence and quite a lot of funding when we look at the hard numbers. It's hard to say exactly how much of that funding is going into fossil fuels specifically. Universities don't have to make all of their sort of endowment investments completely public. At many schools, we've seen, even that investments on the order of 2 or 5% or something like this still spark quite a lot of outcry from campus organizers.
So this new analysis that we're talking about from Sunstone Strategies, again, this is a climate-focused research group, name names, and it's a list of 21 board members. What really stood out for you when you looked at this list?
Yeah, I think the sort of sheer volume of fossil fuel ties that we see on the University of California and CSU boards is really, I think, the thing that kind of stood out the most to me. It should, I guess, come as no surprise that a state where energy makes up such a massive part of the economy and where the energy lobby is so powerful, I guess it should come as no surprise that these really influential institutions have these sort of relationships. But still, I think, something worth noting, especially as universities talk a big game about their sort of, desire to move away from fossil fuels and decarbonize their campuses and things like this. There were some specific names that really made me raise my eyebrows. As you mentioned, there were five of these connections specifically that were linked essentially to Chevron. That's either current higher ups at Chevron or former ones. The former Chevron CEO, John Watson, actually sits on the board of the University of California, Davis. He sits on the Chancellor's Board of Advisors there. So we're not just talking about, you know, the sort of mid-level executives. We're talking about the CEOs and former CEOs in some cases.
So let's talk about that. So John Watson, former, as you say, former Chevron CEO, sits on the Chancellor's Board of Advisors at UC Davis. So what are these relationships like? I mean, what sort of influence do these people have on these universities?
It's hard to say exactly what the influence of these particular board members can be because, you know, in a number of cases, these roles kind of officially come with a variety of responsibilities, including fundraising, you know, talking to their kind of friends in elite spheres and calling for more funding. In other cases, it requires sort of advising senior university leadership, helping to create campus policies and things like this. But I think what we also see is that the fact of people being in the same rooms together can mean that the relationships can sometimes extend beyond what they're officially supposed to or officially have to on paper, I suppose. You know, I guess one case that really shows this for me is there's a man named Stephen Strachan, who until this past December was the head of the oil and gas production firm Strachan Exploration Corporation. And he's a member of the UC San Diego's Foundation Board of Trustees. But he also is actually on the leadership committee for a climate research school there. And so, you know, in that case, it's difficult to say, you know, is that something that actually came from his leadership on the Board of Trustees? Who can say for sure? But it is clear that sometimes these relationships can extend beyond the sort of narrow confines of a Board of Trustees or a Board of Advisors.
A couple other examples. Henry Perea, a government affairs manager for Chevron, sits on the Board of Governors at the California State University Foundation, as does Gillian Wright, senior VP at gas distribution utility SoCalGas. Megan Lopez, who is Chevron's policy, government, and public affairs representative, sits on the board of Cal State Bakersfield, as do higher-ups at oil company Kern Oil and Refining, fossil fuel exploration company California Resources Corporation, and oil and gas exploration company Era Energy. Have you reached out to Chevron to ask about these relationships? Because you have talked to many of the schools, and we'll discuss that in a minute.
I did indeed reach out to Chevron. And I mean, unsurprisingly, but I think rather fascinatingly, the perspective of Chevron and in my previous reporting of many other sort of oil and gas companies is essentially that these relationships are a positive for them because they're a way that the company can kind of demonstrate its commitment to boosting education and boosting research. A spokesperson at Chevron, Ross Allen, essentially pointed to the company's various education partnerships, the way that it's like put funding and other resources into a variety of, you know, kind of curricula building or you know, schools, things like this, initiatives that are sometimes focused on things like climate policy or things like, you know, the energy economy and things like this. And he told me that working with university leadership to build a bright future, that's a quote, for the state is part of its commitment to education. So in essence, you know, I think in many cases, the oil companies sort of say, yeah, of course we have, you know, these relationships. Of course, we're a big part of the economy. And of course, this is just a part of what we're doing to boost a bright future.
What struck you about what you heard from the schools? So just a couple examples. Bill Kislyuk, a spokesperson for UC Davis, said the university has, quote, dramatically cut fossil fuel use and has additional climate plans in the works. And members of the university's chancellors and foundation boards, quote, while making valuable contribution to the university, end quote, do not control university policy or research.
Yeah, so Bill Kislyuk, the spokesperson at UC Davis, he really echoed, I think, what we heard from a number of spokespeople. You know, the folks from University of California, Santa Cruz, had a sort of similar response. And there are two threads here. One is essentially, you know, the university is kind of committed to the climate fight. It's committed to environmental justice. And, you know, there's a variety of ways in which the universities have demonstrated that. They all have, you know, decarbonization action plans in various ways. They all do engage in climate research. And so, you know, it's true that there have been some sort of climate pledges and promises on the books and some real climate research coming out of these schools. The other aspect is this sort of idea that, you know, that no one in these positions has an official say over university or policy or research. As we heard from UC Davis, the folks at University of California, Santa Cruz, sort of said that nobody could ever steer research away from the climate work happening on campus. Both of these things might be true, but I guess, you know, what I would pose as a question to these schools is, you know, though you might not have a sort of official line of allowing any sort of influence to come in, what are the unofficial ways or the sort of informal ways that influence can be seen? To go back, for instance, to John Watson, the former CEO of Chevron, who sits on the Chancellor's Board of Advisors at UC Davis. You know, Chevron is a company that's partnered with UC Davis in a number of ways. It's also accepted funding from Chevron over the years. And no one, again, can sort of say, oh, that's because of this relationship with somebody on the board. But it can sort of make you question, you know, well, is Chevron funding research that is specifically good for its business model? Might Chevron be bringing people into the classroom who align with its vision for the future, whether or not that vision aligns with, you know, the best available climate science? So what are the subtler ways that we might be able to see that influence in the classroom and in the research that's coming out of universities?
Today, we are speaking with Darna Noor, a fossil fuels and climate reporter at The Guardian US. We're talking about Darna's latest report. At least 20 California public university board members are linked to fossil fuels. It's not just California, and we'll talk about that in a minute. If you have a question or comment about this, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. If you work at a university and would like to talk about what your thoughts are about the ties between executives at fossil fuel companies and universities, we'd love to hear from you, or just any questions about this. And beyond these connections, there's also big money here, which we'll discuss in a minute. You can email your call at kalw.org. Before we move on to California, Darna, why isn't this getting more attention? Because I was just searching Sunstone Strategies, and the only articles that come up are yours, and then the Mother Jones ran your piece. So I thought, oh, Mother Jones covered it, but they actually ran your piece. So why isn't this getting more attention?
I mean, I guess what I'll say is, in many cases, it's not actually as though the actions here are out of the ordinary or disallowed in any way. You know, it's very common in the United States for private interests to have these relationships with either public universities or universities that maybe they're private companies themselves, but at least in theory are supposed to be serving the public interest. You know, for instance, if you look at a sort of major university like Stanford, there are board members on Stanford's board of trustees that work at, you know, the CEO of Zillow, for instance, or, you know, folks at different, you know, sort of equity firms and the Walton Family Foundation, you know, a number of different sort of private interests. And so the oil and gas industry, I think, sort of operates in the same landscape that many of these other industries do. In many, it's not really disallowed for industries to try to protect their interests by having these kinds of relationships. But I think that the fact that you know, the fact that there are no sort of laws preventing this, the fact that there aren't a lot of regulations about this, doesn't mean that we should sort of turn the other cheek and wonder what the consequences could be.
Well, exactly. And I think we're all used to everything having a corporate name on it at this point. I mean, you hear this funded by and name the corporation. But in this case, I mean, we're talking about the climate crisis. So in this case, I would say it's a bit different just because you want to know, what are they getting in return?
Yeah, 100%. Right. And I mean, there are some there's some research that shows that they actually are getting quite a bit in return. I mean, there was a piece, there was a peer-reviewed study that came out last year that looked at the effect of gas industry funding on university research. And it found, surprise, surprise, that in many cases, industry research that, or research rather, that was funded by the gas industry was more favorable to the kinds of climate solutions that the gas industry favors, like, you know, green hydrogen and things like this. Mm-hmm. You know, the the kinds of sort of climate solutions that that the industry advocates for and lobbies for and things like this. And so, you know, I think obviously many folks doing this climate research, many of the folks who are sort of making university policy might have their hearts in the right places, but it's really hard to bite the hand that feeds you. And, you know, I think it rightfully just raises a lot of questions generally about how serious, California's public universities are in the move to really ditch oil and gas. You know, there might be very serious about bringing more renewables online, but it turns out we don't only have to do that. We also have to get the dirty energy offline too. So,
right. We've also done a number of shows about chemicals. So I should mention this one. Tim Shestek is Senior Director of State Affairs for the American Chemistry Council, and he serves on the Alumni Association Board of Directors for Sacramento State. Yeah. There's so many others here. You can find a link at yourcallradio.org. Oh, here's one more. Patrick Mullen, Regional Director of Customer Service at PG&E, sits on the Board of Directors at Cal Poly. Let's hear a caller on this. Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hello, thank you. I can't believe that any human being with a functioning brain would believe this BS coming from these corporations who are sitting on, people are sitting on these boards. I mean, it's impossible for me to believe that the companies that denied global warming, hid research that indicated that it was happening for the last 50 years, are now sitting on these boards. I mean, I mean, how many environmentalists are on these boards? It's just, the benefit to them is appreciable. I have no idea why they're even there other than to serve the interests of their corporation. Mm. So, I mean, it's just, it's not a serious attempt to really address this problem, this catastrophe, with which is global warming.
Well, thanks, Greg, and that's a great question. Darna, do you have any idea how many environmentalists sit on these boards?
I mean, in some cases, there are also, you know, folks who work for utilities that also distribute renewables or, you know, companies that are working to promote wind and solar and things like this. But I would just say, you know, I, of course, as a reporter, it's not my position. It's not my job to sort of weigh in on my personal feelings here. But I will say that, like, of course, it's the job of a private corporation to protect its interests. And so I kind of feel like, of course, we should all assume that anything that a private corporation is doing is going to be to protect its business model. And so Chevron can say all at once, oh, we're investing a little bit in renewable energy and things like this. But the truth of the matter is that the majority of its business model is based on fuels that we know to be the leading cause of the climate crisis, on, you know, oil and gas and to a lesser extent, coal. And if that's what we're seeing in the material world, then I think we should question any place that they're having any sort of influence, whether or not they say that that influence is, you know, really meant to be protecting the climate pledges that these universities are making. We have to question any of those kinds of relationships, seeing as their main business model is still in planet warming fossil fuels.
In addition to these ties, we should also mention, and this is according to Amy Westervelt, who published a piece at The Guardian back in March, that fossil fuel companies donated $700 million to U.S. universities over 10 yep. years. Amy writes, six fossil fuel companies funneled more than $700 million in research funding to 27 universities in 2010 to 2020. This is according to Data for Progress and Fossil Fuel Research. Greg Adcox, polling analyst for Data for Progress, said $700 million is probably an absolute bare minimum. There is so little transparency around these gifts. Amy Westervelt reports the top five schools on the list include some that champion their climate research. UC Berkeley is at the very top, $154 million, followed by Stanford University, $56 million. So, Darna, there are two more California schools.
Absolutely. And, you know, those are certainly not the only two schools in California that are on that that list of schools that are accepting this kind of fossil fuel related research. I'll say, too, that, you know, it's funny, I actually also covered that report when it came out from Data for Progress and Fossil Free Research. And I want to note that, you know, as eye-popping as those numbers are, $700 million sounds like a lot of money over the course of 10 years. But those are really, really conservative estimates. I mean, we're talking about completely unregulated in many states, completely unregulated and completely kind of opaque type of funding. $700 million to 27 universities probably pales in comparison to the amount, the kind of real figures that we're seeing when we look at fossil fuel tied research funding.
Right. And then if you look at the profits, that's really a drop in the bucket. In fact, exactly. Reuters just reported 3 days ago that Exxon posted $9.1 billion just for third quarter profits.
Absolutely. And what we're seeing, I think, is that it's similar to what we see critics point to in oil company behavior all the time, where, you know, the things that they'll promote the most often are things like investments in renewables, investments in climate research. But of course, you know, it really makes up a tiny fraction of the amount of money that they're spending on, you know, their operations in general. The vast majority of that is still going into the oil and gas industry, of course.
Darna, you just dropped a new story. We have just a couple of minutes left here. If you can just tell us about this. Students at six universities, including the University of Chicago and Tufts, filed legal complaints today accusing their college of breaking a little-known law by investing in planet-heating fossil fuels.
Yep, absolutely. So this is part of a kind of trend that we're seeing. There were six filed today, and then there have been more than a dozen similar initiatives at colleges around the U.S. Essentially, these students are filing these legal complaints saying that it's not only unethical for their universities to be investing in fossil fuels, but it's also illegal because as nonprofits, universities actually have a responsibility to protect the public interest and to make investments that are in line with the values of their institutions. And so essentially, if they're saying, you know, we're going to protect our communities around us, and we're also committed to taking on the climate crisis, that means that it is, in the eyes of these students, actually illegal for them to be continuing to invest in coal, oil, and gas.
Gosh, the youth are so involved in this issue.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the kind of passion and level of kind of involvement on campuses that we've seen in the past 10 years is really incredible.
And then, of course, that lawsuit in Montana.
Absolutely.
Where they won. That was a major victory for the climate movement.
Yes, totally. And then next year, we're going to be seeing a similar lawsuit taking off in Hawaii, where there'll be a trial. And then the federal lawsuit, Juliana versus United States, which was also brought by youth, is set to go to trial probably sometime next year, too. So lots to look out for.
You know, Darna, we have about a minute left. Environmentalists are concerned, though, that even if these lawsuits are victorious, they might ultimately make their way to the Supreme Court. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that it's definitely a risk. And I think it shows that while this sort of legal action can be a really important part of the solution and might deliver some real wins on some levels, it needs to be paired with a sort of bigger strategy that operates at all levels, not only in the courts, but also sort of, you know, on the campuses, at the ballot box, in legislative offices, on Capitol Hill. We need a total transformation of every sector and every facet of human life, really, to take on this crisis. And so we need every strategy that we can get.
Darna Noor is a fossil fuels and climate reporter at The Guardian US. You can find her pieces that we just mentioned. At least 20 California Public University board members are linked to fossil fuels. And then a new one just out today, U.S. students file complaints against six universities over fossil fuel investments at yourcallradio.org. Darna, thank you so much for your great reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks. Always such a pleasure. Take care.
Thank you. You too. And thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And thanks so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.